Blog Talk Radio.
Has added hundreds of extra work hours each year
while earning better educational credits, yet is still struggling to keep up. So we're working harder, we've got more education, and it's not helping us financially. The state of working America tracks the economic growth of the middle class, the little there is, and finds that a middle class family's income would have been an average of $19,000 higher per year by 2007 if the shared growth claimed by the richest households had not grown so much over the past 30 years. Likewise, wealth for the typical American family would have been $62,000 higher in 2010 had the growth in wealth over the same years not been overwhelmingly claimed by the families at the very top. The research also shows that the growing income inequality has not been offset by increased mobility. These trends have not occurred by accident. Economic policies have undercut the ability of workers to benefit from economic growth. The book also examines mobility up and down the economic ladder, wages and salary growth, with the biggest jump going to those at the top. Job growth and loss, wealth and network of working families versus the wealthy, and the growing number of families slipping into poverty. You can read a summary of the key findings from the State of Working America, and you can download these if you go to this site. The AFL-CIO, now you can download the whole book. And there's some other good articles on this site, too.
Yeah. There's one I wanted to
interviewed by Fox News.
Yeah, and they asked him who they thought was the middle class was.
Oh, really?
And he said that he said what price range is the middle class from? You know, and he said $200,000 to $250,000. The guy said, you think $100,000? You know,
somebody like a person who earns is this for a family?
Yeah.
This is per family.
Yeah.
If your income is $200,000 to $250,000, your family income, you're considered
middle class, according to Romney.
Oh, okay.
Of course, the average median income for a family in the United States is $50,000 for two people working. So much for Mr. Romney's.
I think he's absolutely accurate.
How do you say that?
Because of the cost of things. You're not rich on $200,000 if you live in the city.
You're middle class.
But anybody less than that, you know, you're not middle class because you can hardly afford gas to put in your car.
Okay, well, at $150,000 to $200,000 a year, you can't afford gas.
I said when you make less than that, it's very expensive for people to pay mortgages, to buy food. They have a couple of kids. They're not living large.
Well, according to the AFL-CIO report, 40% of American workers live paycheck to paycheck.
That's right. They're poor.
Well, I understand that. I think I understand that. What I don't understand is how anybody making, you know, you can understand a guy making $250 million. Or $500 million, like Romney is. Right? You may consider, $250,000 a year.
That's family income. The wife is probably working.
It doesn't matter if it's family income.
I'm telling you is that that's the income of the family, not of one person. That's very different than one person's income. But go ahead.
That isn't what I was saying. What I was saying is that they're saying what middle class is. It doesn't mean one earner. It means middle class income. So middle class income, if you're making $200,000 or $250,000 a year, Romney considers you middle class. If you're making less than that, he considers you, he doesn't consider you, because you're not a middle class person. You're part of the 47% that he doesn't care about. Okay. But in reality, that 47% is really 99%, because 99% of the only 1% of the country make $250,000 and more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
American workers are existing on the edge of financial disaster. 40% say they live paycheck to paycheck, according to a recent career building survey. Worse, 37% say they sometimes need to rely on the next payday to make ends meet. Although the percentage of those literally living for payday has decreased from 42% in 2000, to 46% in 2008, the height of the recession. This is not good news. In addition, the survey found women, 44%, are more likely than men, 36%, to live paycheck to paycheck. One quarter, 25% of female workers missed a monthly payment at least once in the past year, compared to 17% of men. More than a quarter of workers, 27%, do not save anything each month, and 30% save more than $250 in a month, and 10 save more than $1,000. Right? Career Builder, the nation's largest online job site, also found that those who are most likely to live paycheck to paycheck are between age 45 and 54, or 43% of the working.
Probably people with kids. A lot of
expenses. Huffington Post looked at the reasons why these age groups would have the toughest time making ends meet. There's a squeeze of supporting children and family. One survey found 90% of boomers shouldn't shoulder this load. And the fact that a quarter of Americans age 50 and up used all of their savings during the recession years of 2007 to 2009. Health also affects one's ability to make ends meet. Injury and illness are the biggest cause of personal death for 40 to 59-year-olds, according to the AOL jobs article.
Because then they can't get on Medicare.
Still, whether 40% or 43% of working people live from paycheck to paycheck, either percentage is far too high for a nation this rich, there's something more going on. The declining standard of living for middle and working class Americans is no accident. U.S. trade policies depleted our nation's manufacturing base. Federal tax policies promoted inequality and rewarded wealth over work, and leaving us without enough money to fund our public infrastructure or the education and training we need in a global economy. And some employers and lawmakers have made conscious and coordinated efforts to delegitimize government and destroy unions to take away working people's abilities to stand up to corporate excess. The Romney-Ryan ticket is support for offshoring jobs, massive tax cuts to the massively wealthy, and calls to defund core public programs like bridge and street maintenance, education, Social Security, and Medicare to further financially sink America's middle and working class. The thought of how many U.S. workers will be living paycheck to paycheck at the end of the Romney administration is chilling. I have to agree with that.
Yeah.
I have to agree with that.
And he's not very sympathetic either.
No.
A cold-hearted guy.
Exactly.
Cold-hearted guy. And stupid.
Oh.
I mean, cold-hearted and not very bright. I mean, I think he's kind of a puppet kind of guy. He's always been put in a place and told what to do, and his life has been very easy.
Okay, yeah.
Propped up, and that's why he makes all these gaffes in his speeches, because he doesn't think.
Yeah.
And he obviously doesn't have very alert people around him.
He's
a
moron.
You know, he's not very good.
And refusing to turn over more than 2 years of tax returns, Republican president candidate Mitt Romney brags that he paid all of his taxes but not a penny more. Meaning no matter what he paid, he coughed up a pretty minimal amount. However, how you slice it, not only can Romney get away with legally paying very little in taxes, but his low tax rate is within an already low national tax rate. A recent Foreign Affairs article, America, the Undertaxed, provides a much-needed corrective this election cycle. Compared with other developed countries, the United States has very low taxes, little redistribution of income, and an extraordinary complex tax code. These three aspects of American exceptionalism deserve more attention than they typically receive. Yet under the Romney-Ryan budget plan, Romney would get another $4.5 million in tax cuts.
Huh.
Romney would pay less than 1% in taxes on the $20 million of income. You have
no. No, I can't.
How does the nation make up for that loss? Well, Romney and his vice presidential running mate, Paul Ryan, have the answer. Make the middle class pay for the Center for America, from the Center of American Progress. Romney and Ryan forced a $2,000 tax hike on millions of the middle class. The plan would raise taxes on 95% of Americans, from the single parent working minimum wage job to a family making $150,000 a year, just to give the wealthiest Americans another break. That's
unbelievable.
America the Undertaxed needs a qualification, especially if you're extremely wealthy, especially if you're Mitt Romney. That's
disgraceful. You wonder how he gets up in the morning.
Well,
somebody probably wakes him up and brings him his coffee. That's how he gets up.
That's how he does it.
Arrogant.
SOB.
And Paul Ryan, he's right there with him.
Oh, this is something else that really, really, really struck me this morning when I read it. Now, this is just quickly, but it's Romney bemoans union contracts will prevent mass firing of federal workers. We all have regrets in our lives, even Mitt Romney, who told a group of high-rolling donors that he regrets federal workers are protected by union contracts, so that if he wins the election, he won't be able to fire as many workers as he'd like.
Oh.
Yeah. In that same secretly recorded video, where he calls half a nation freeloaders, one of the attendees at the $50,000 fundraiser, a billionaire Mark Leader, Posh Mansion, leaders Posh Mansion urges Romney to clean house in federal agencies, including Wall Street's watchdog, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, and the U.S. Commodities Future Trading Commission. President Mitt says he'd love to cut a wide swath through the federal workforce, but his hands are tied by union contracts. He says, I wish we weren't unionized so we could go a lot deeper than you're actually allowed to go. According to Romney, teases his high-value campaign cash cow audience with this. But we can find a way. Maybe he could dust off his old vain capital playbook. They quote him as saying, but we can find a way. And here's a question for Romney. If weren't for those darn union contracts, how many job safety or food inspectors, Border Patrol agents, air traffic controllers, veteran affairs doctors, and nurses, and other hardworking federal employees would you fire? Now, this guy is a flipback. I'm sorry, he's just an absolute.
Well, he wants to destroy the structure and the fabric of our country. And then he'll drain every cent out of it, and he'll move somewhere else.
Well, that's what they did.
That's all. He has no. He's not a loyal American.
No, God no. I mean
he's a vulture trying to pick on the carcass.
Vulture capitalist. Exactly what he is.
Dreadful, sir.
Yeah. Here's something else that I thought was interesting. I didn't want to read this, but I think it's this one and this one. But this one more so. The trade deficit with China cost 2.7 million U.S. jobs. Mm-hmm. You going to read it or you want me to?
Just a second. I was looking at the second one. The next one is America's middle class shrinking fast. But let's read this one, the trade deficit.
Yeah,
trade, trade deficits matter. 2.7 million U.S. jobs have been lost over the past decade due to our nation's growing trade deficit with China, according to a new report out today. The China toll also shows that between 2001, when China was admitted into the WTO, and 2011, the U.S. trade deficit with that nation eliminated or displaced 2.1 million manufacturing jobs. Those jobs represent more than half of all U.S. manufacturing jobs lost during that time. When the report by the Economic Policy Institute breaks down the types of manufacturing jobs lost, it finds most are concentrated in computer and electronic products. The trade deficit growth in this area contributed to the elimination of 1,064,800 U.S. jobs in computer and electronic products in this period. Indeed, in 2011, the total U.S. trade deficit with China was $301.6 billion, minus $139.3 billion of which was in computer and electronic products. Other report findings show that nearly every industry in every state in the District of Columbia was affected by trade deficit-related job loss. That's the more than 2.7 million U.S. jobs lost or displaced by the trade deficit with China were distributed among all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico, with the biggest net losses occurring in California, 474,000, Texas, 239,000, New York, 158,000, Illinois, 139,000, North Carolina, 110,000, Florida, 106,000, Pennsylvania, 101,000, Ohio, 95,000, Massachusetts, 92,000, and Georgia, 87,000. That's a lot of jobs. Other industrial sectors hit hard by growing trade deficits with China between 2001 and 2011 include apparel and accessories, 211,000 jobs, textile mills and textile product mills, 106,000 jobs, fabricated metal products, 120,000 jobs, furniture and fixtures, 80,000 jobs, plastics and rubber products, 57,000 jobs, motor vehicles and parts, 19,000 jobs, and miscellaneous manufactured goods, 111,000 jobs. Several service sectors were also hit hard by the indirect job losses, including administrative, support, and waste management service, 160,000 jobs, and professional, scientific, and technical services, 140,000 jobs. Oh, boy. And it says, check out an interactive map here that shows the losses by state. Do you want to see that and see how much we lost here in Connecticut? I'm just curious. Oh, I don't think we can. We don't have the flash player. That's too bad.
The same apple is that.
Tell us what you think. Democratic versus Republican platform. Where did that go? That was kind of interesting. I wonder what people had to say. It said the Democratic platform versus the Republican platform. Let's see. Let's go to the next page and see if there's a little bit more here. There's something. Oh, here's interesting. A growing problem for all families, student loan debt. This is really awful for people. As low-income and first-generation college student in my family, the subject of student loans has been a matter of acute concern to me. High school counselors constantly told me that student loans are good debt. This type of information made it justifiable for peers in similar socioeconomic situations to borrow federal and private loans. But lenders take advantage of first-time borrowers by failing to explain in full detail future payment plans, which may cause individuals to be financially unprepared for postgraduate life. Current student debt trends must be fixed in order to stop setting up graduates for a lifetime of financial struggle. When the nation engages in a debate about the country's financial future, the topic of student debt must be recognized as an important issue for its potentially crippling impact on the lives of young college graduates, and it's a drag on the economic recovery. Young workers think of student loans as good debt because in the long term they will pay it off provided they secure a stable job. But between graduation and landing a secure job, college graduates are expected to pay off loans that are not in sync with the reality of the job market. The average student debt in 2011 was $23,300. Recent college graduates stepped into a bleak job market. The Economic Policy Institute reports that the unemployment rate for college graduates was 9.4% in 2011, while the underemployment rate was 19.1%. Someone in five college graduates finds themselves in a job without sufficient hours, while about one in three is either looking for work or employed part-time. In addition, according to a recent Rutgers study, 43% of college graduates report working jobs where no college degree is required, meaning they are overqualified but they must take the job anyway. On top of facing scarce job prospects, college graduates must pay off student loan debt, which often comes due before they find secure employment. Graduates who are unable to pay off student loans face severe consequences, especially with private loans. Meanwhile, the lack of substantive regulation in private lenders' repayment plans, interest rates, and collection processes increases the risk of defaulting loans. The stagnant job market and the student debt college graduates face cripple their financial choices in the short term and the long term. They put off major purchases such as cars and homes. An income-based repayment program for federal loans was recently institutionalized to combat defaults on federal loans, but more must be done to help families with facing the rising cost of higher education. Rising tuition and the loss of public funds to help students finance their education means that more students must borrow more money in order to attend college. Something that was once a luxury but is increasingly a necessity in the modern economy. Federal and state governments need to take real action to reduce the cost of higher education by making tuition more affordable and loans less burdensome, and make sure that we can have good jobs when we graduate and so that everyone has access to education and the upward mobility it can provide. So, people are having a hard time.
So, this
is a good one. I think you ought to read that. Republican or Democratic president, which is better for you possible? That's what I would.
Yeah. And I've got, after the break, I've got two essays of my own that I want to read. I want to go on with Romney. I don't want to go on with this one. But Republicans or Democratic president, which is better for your pocket? Are you financially better off when the president is Republican or Democrat? According to the new book, Rules, Bears, and the Ballot Box, how the performance of our president has impacted your wallet, the answer is not what is widely believed. An analysis is spanning 80 years and 13 presidents from Herbert Hoover to George W. Bush. How does Lou Wolfarb and Bob Dietrich track in their words? The GOP theory of Republican economic dominance is no more than a myth. Period. In other words, the Democratic president has the best financial track record for our nation. Let's say you had $100,000 in a 401k account in 1993. At the beginning of President Clinton's 8 years in office, and withdrawn it in 2001 when he left, you would have amassed $341,894. you invested the same amount in 2001 that President George W. Bush took office, and withdrawn it 8 years later, you actually would have lost money, holding only $64,990. The difference of $277,000 between the two presidential terms. Republican and Democratic presidents each served 40 years in the periods the author examined. They included the President Obama term because he hadn't completed it. In parts of their analysis, Goldfarb and Dietrich developed a ranking system they called the Presidential Rule of Economic Success, which they described as qualitative or subjective components to our book. We tread the press, PRES, rules through each chapter and cite examples where a president did or did not adhere to the PRES rules.
PRES rules. PRES rules.
Yeah, but that's capital PRES. There must be something. Oh, Presidential Rules for Economic Success.
Yes, PRES rules.
And did not adhere to the press rules, and more often than not. Topping the list for boosting the nation's finances under his rank are John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, combined with Kennedy, because Kennedy did not finish his term. Second place is a tie between Franklin Roosevelt and Bill Clinton. The highest-ranking Republican is Dwight Eisenhower, who created the national federal government-funded interstate system. Goldfarb said the lowest of all was Hoover. The two authors who have 52 years of combined experience in professional law and wealth management say that despite the social issues that often cloud presidential and down ballot races, we believe the readers need to understand that whom they decide to vote for is very important to their personal bottom line, to their net worth, and to their retirement and children's education. We believe that Americans should consider voting for the economic wallet, for their IRA, for their 401k, for their 403 plan, and for their kids' 529 plan as well. They also chide the Democrats who are not better conveying the extent to which their party has bolstered the nation's economy. Check out Bill's Bears in the Ballot Box here, which is their book. And the site has an interactive slide screen you can check on. Find out what rank of each president is in the analysis. Want to see
the Oh, we probably can't because of the...
Oh, yeah. So, anyway.
Let's just not download it, Leo.
Well, you can re-download it.
I don't want to because I don't want to put too much on it.
The flash would not be much like
it. Oh, okay.
So, anyway. All right, let's go to a little music break, and we'll be back right after this.
Okay.
Thank you.
families 47%, 47% are 99% of the Americans, of all Americans. Again, let me repeat that. Families 47% are 99% of all Americans. I have yet to see a more arrogant imbecile run for public office. There is very little, if anything, to like about Romney. He and his wife remind me of the characters of the television series Mad Men. I'm going to preface that with Lila. Lila was the one who also saw that in the...
I said it to you.
You said it to me, right?
Yeah.
So, there you go, folks. But it's very true.
I feel like when I see them, I'm looking back 30 years.
Well, their lifestyle, morality, and fashion are a complete throwback to the late 50s and early 60s culture of Madison Avenue advertising firms. Their entire existence is dependent on the delusion of false values and mammon, the god of money. Everything about the Romney suggests a divorce from the economic reality faced by the majority of the American people. Romney has no morality. His entire public and private life is nothing more than a series of manipulations and destruction of people's lives and livelihoods. His cynicism is completely obvious to everyone on the Mama Jones video. He is taking off the cuff. He was talking off the cuff to wealthy donors to his campaign, each having paid $50,000 to see and hear him speak. He was speaking to his base when he said he didn't care about half of America's population. He didn't care about them because they didn't pay taxes and were dependent on the government. He cynically overlooked that all of the 47% are grossly underpaid, unemployed, or underemployed, and underwater in debt because of his and the Republican economic policies of the last 30 years. He knows that his and Ryan's policies would devastate that 47% and ruin the remaining 52% that he needs to get elected. The only people that would benefit from Romney's presidency would be the 1% that he is part of. I am disgusted by Romney. His disdain and indifference to the American people is sociopathic. Electing this man as president would be suicidal for America. His qualifications for the presidency are only that he was the token head of a vulture capital firm, Bain Capital. Bain was founded by an Israeli Mossad agent. Romney was brought into the firm because of his father's connections, and they needed a token figurehead. Not because of anything he was capable of doing. His obvious amorality, arrogance, and greed were the perfect qualifications for a figurehead job of CEO of Bain Capital. So, fellow 99%, where does that leave us? As disappointing as Obama's presidency has been, 4 years of the Romney to Republican presidency would be completely devastating to us. I know there are many people who will vote for this vulture, because they are vultures themselves. However, anyone else who votes for Romney is a complete fool. There you go, folks. There you go, folks. And I'm going to leave you with one more of these. We live in Connecticut here, and in Connecticut we've got a fascinating race going on between the Senate, with Joe Lieberman in the seat in the Senate. The Democratic nominee is Chris Murphy, and the Republican candidate is Linda McMahon. And Linda McMahon is the CEO and co-founder of the WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. It's been a really, really interesting race. And let me just go through this, because we talked with this Chris Murphy and other Chris Nod. I saw another SmackDown political ad this morning by Linda McMahon, the CEO and co-founder of the WWE, now running for Connecticut Senate seat. This race for Joe Lieberman's soon-to-be-vacant seat is one of the best political races I've ever seen. I have never been an admirer of Chris Murphy, former congressman from my home state, Connecticut, but neither have I been a fan of Linda McMahon until recently, who is a fluffy Republican who seems to have unlimited funds and developing strong fan base. Recent polls show her running in dead heat with Murphy. I believe she will win this election because she is relentless in her valid attacks on her Democratic opponent, Chris Murphy. I am actually beginning to enjoy watching her as successfully defending herself from the kitten scratch attacks by Murphy, then clawing his face off and smacking him to the floor. This new ad has thrown him over the ropes and onto the concrete floor and may have left him unconscious. I can't see him getting up to defend himself this time. It appears that Chris Murphy took his apprenticeship in Congress from the man out of government, Senator Chris Dodd. Chris Dodd had a better attendance record as chairman of the Senate Finance Committee than Chris Murphy had as the House Finance and Banking Committee. Chris Murphy learned his lesson well, taking large donations from the bank, then voting for a massive $400 million bailout of the same bank. Not to mention his mastering the art of negotiation by refinancing his own foreclosure at a low interest rate from the same bank that got the bailout. This is the same type of criminal act that got Chris Dodd into trouble. It's hard to understand how Murphy couldn't pay his mortgage on a $170,000 salary. And one has to wonder if he has a gambling problem. Even if he doesn't, how can anyone trust him with allocating government funds if he can't budget his own personal expenses? It's amazing that the mainstream media in Connecticut never picked up on that. Nor, for some reason, never had a discouraging word to say about Chris Murphy, and still doesn't, except to insinuate that the negative campaigning on both sides are getting a little rough. But it doesn't stop them from playing the ads. The hypocrisy of Murphy and Dodd has become synonymous with Connecticut politics. I'm pleased that Linda McMahon is running for office in Connecticut. She's exposing all the hidden flaws in her Democratic opponents. She virtually destroyed Richard Blumenthal in the 2010 run for Chris Dodd's Senate seat. And after she exposed his lie about being a Vietnam vet. But there were too many Jewish voters in Connecticut to end his career, and Connecticut hasn't had a Republican senator since the infamous Lowell Weicker 30 years ago, unless you count the crypto-Republican Joe Lieber. So keep on kicking, Linda, and don't let the Democratic dirtbag get away with anything. I think most Connecticut voters are surprised and pleased that she has uncovered so much dirt on Murphy, which is something the news agencies have neglected or refused to do. As an independent, I'm enjoying my weekly colored flyer from Linda's campaign with another often funny and factual smackdown with Murphy. I only hope that her victory will also be a victory for Connecticut residents. And,
well, I don't want her elected.
But you want Chris Murphy. I don't like this guy. Did I say that?
Well, I don't think she's my alternative.
Well,
that's
she's
for
not
sure.
mine either, but that, I'm not voting for her. I'm just saying I think she's going to win because the guy is such a schmuck. Okay?
Well, he's a weak candidate. Very vulnerable.
The guy's
I was very disappointed in him and...
Everything that he's done.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing that he's done that has been, of any... there was a wee something up there that I don't even know. He smacked him in the...
Etsy?
Lee
Etsy?
No, something or another was... Well, I remember she was... she came out again.
She was pro-Palestine?
She was pro-Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
And she said... in debate, she said that Chris Murphy is so far up their rear end that he was beyond belief.
Mm-hmm.
So she lambasted him for being such a Zionist. Anyway, aside from that, Murphy is not only is he that, but he's just such a lackluster. And then to find out that he missed 80% of his hearings.
in the Senate committee, and he was in foreclosure at the time. All right, and losing his way out and got a loan from bailing out a bank. That's kind of got to make us a little wonder about this guy. You know that?
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's what got Todd out of the race.
Chris Dodd. And also the congressman. State representative.
Yeah, Donovan.
Chris Donovan.
Donovan, the same way.
He was endorsed by the Democrats, and he was campaign bribing and that kind of stuff, and it was a federal investigation. And he lost the primary. And
four or five members of this cabinet were.
It's just very discouraging when you hear this kind of information about people,
and then where do you go
to vote?
Yeah,
where does that put you?
You want that kind of guy, as a congressman?
I don't think
so. Murphy is your. Murphy was a congressman, and having known about his bull in the last Nova, but our pathetic news agencies in the state
don't report.
Don't report anything.
They don't give a report card on these guys. No. They just pretend like they all do a great job.
So
they don't report on anybody.
Yeah. So when Linda McMahon comes out and is running against him, I mean, she's got a great research division there in our campaign.
Well, she has plenty of money.
Yeah.
She can afford to pay anybody.
And it doesn't matter. It's Lila. Yeah. Would you have rather not heard about that?
That is not the point. It is not the point. The point is that I'm not happy with either candidate.
I'm really sorry that
the Democrats couldn't come up with two better candidates.
Well, yeah, at least one of them would have even lost. But these guys are serious pathetics. So, anyway, aside from that, you can go to the website.
Which website did you want to go to?
Some of your friends, and the perky brunette who gained universal criticism for our role in the scandalous affair is presumed to have remained bitter and angry after several years, unable to wash her hands clean. Monica has tried to move forward, but the nightmare of her affair with Bill still haunts her, as a pal of hers who spoke to the Inquirer.
Well, it couldn't have been too horrible because she's writing a book about it.
About $12 million. According to the Daily Mail, Lewinsky is set to disclose searing details that would even make E.J. James, author of 50 Shades of Grey, blush. And according to friends close to Lewinsky, this memoir has been sent Bill to the hospital with a heart attack, facing humiliation from peers and family, laying out their 9 sexual truths from November 1995 to March 1997 in one of their letters. Bill apparently refers to Hillary as a cold fish. Lewinsky, who fled the state a few years after the shit hit the fan, relocated to London, where she received her master's degree in social psychology from the London School of Economics. She was widely known thereafter for her fashion handbag line and role as an on-air correspondent for Britain's Channel 5. Well, imagine what Hillary will think when this book hits the shelves. After being married to Bill for over 3 decades, would she really care to be or be surprised that he is an animal in a sack? Well, Monica can describe how Bill went on and on about his insatiable desires for three-way sex, orgies, and other use of sex toys of all kinds. She can also recall everything Bill said about Hillary, including the fact that he thought she wasn't the only one looking for love outside the marriage. That's her pal. Lewinsky has been widely rumored to the pocket. Widely rumored to pocket at least a cool $12 million for her story, fielding a slew of offers from potential editors in New York. Poor Monica can't seem to get a break, unable to secure steady work with such a tarnished reputation since the late 90s. Perhaps this golden book of secrets will reveal the truth of who Bill really is, and how he is no longer the stupefied victim everyone says she is in this unfortunate disaster. It's going to be a big ride. Now, folks, you've got to remember, it's 2012. This is the year of revelations, right? The apocalyptic period. Yeah. The apocalypse meaning that everybody, that all secrets are revealed. Is that it? So, what do you say there?
Well, senior Chinese general orders military to prepare for war with Japan. This is interesting. China's most powerful military leader, in an unusual public statement last week, ordered military forces to prepare for combat as Chinese warships deployed to waters near disputed islands and anti-Japan protests throughout the country turned violent. Protests against the Japanese government's purchase of 3 privately held islands in the Senkaku chain led to mass street protests, the burning of Japanese flags and attacks on Japanese businesses and cars in several cities. Some carried signs that read, "Kill all the Japanese and fight to the death," over the disputed islands. One sign urged China to threaten a nuclear strike against Japan. Yeah. Scary. From the trenches, worldreport.com. That's all it says, yeah. It just gives a history of their.
Because they've been at it for a lot of years, and these guys, they were in Japan actually conquered China.
Yeah.
You know?
The Federal Reserve, a privately owned banking cartel, has been given police powers with Glock 22, I don't know what a Glock 22, and patrol cars. By mid-morning on September 17th, as Occupy Wall Street protesters marched around the perimeter of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, all signs that an FRB FPD, that's like a Federal Reserve Police Department, existed, it disappeared. The FRPD patrol cars and law enforcement officers had been replaced by New York PD patrol cars and officers. That decision may have been to keep from drawing attention to mushrooming new domestic police force that most Americans do not know exists. Quietly, without fanfare or congressional hearing, the U.S. Patriot Act in 2001 bestowed on the 12 privately owned Federal Reserve banks domestic policing powers. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Section 364 of the Act, Uniform Protection Authority for the Federal Reserve, reads, law enforcement officers designated and authorized by the board of the Reserve Bank under paragraph 1 and 2 are authorized while on duty to carry firearms and make arrests without warrants for any offense against the United States committed in their presence. Such officers shall have access to law enforcement information that may be necessary for the protection of property or personnel of the board or the Reserve Bank. The police officers are technically known as FRLEO, short for Federal Reserve Law Enforcement Officers. The system has its own police academies for training, their own patch and badges, uniforms, pistols, rifles, police cars, and the cars, and the power to arrest coast to coast without a warrant. They have ranks of sergeant, lieutenant, captain, and a recruitment ad campaign with the slogan, "It's about respect and recognition from your peers, it's you." Horrible. Well, here's some things to think about. Andrew Jackson killed the central bank. He was poisoned. Abraham Lincoln wanted to dissolve the central bank. Look what happened to him. James Garfield, look what happened to him. John Kennedy, look what happened to him. Apparently, there's a connection between the murder of U.S. presidents and their desire to dissolve the central bank. That in itself speaks volumes as to this private criminal enterprise we call the Fed.
And that's been going on for many years. Don't mess with the Fed. And
we have like 3 minutes.
This was an interesting article.
Yeah, the Siberian. During Soviet times could revolutionize industry. The Siberian branch of the Russian Academy of Sciences at the Papagei crater in eastern Siberia contains many trillions of carats of so-called impact diamonds, good for technological purposes, not for jewelry, and far exceeding the currently known global deposits of conventional diamonds. The head of the Geological and Mineralogical Institute told RIA Novosti news agency Monday that the diamonds include other molecular forms of carbon. He said they could be twice as hot as conventional diamonds and therefore have superlative industrial qualities. He said that the minerals could lead to revolution in various industries, but they can't upset a diamond market because it is shaped by diamonds for jewelry purposes. The deposit was discovered by Soviet scientists in the 1970s, but was left unexplored as the Soviet leadership opted for producing synthetic diamonds for industrial use. The deposit remained classified until after the Soviet collapse. The diamonds owe their unparalleled hardness to enormous pressure and high temperature at the moment of explosion when a giant meteorite hit 35 million years ago, leaving a 100-kilometer crater. The Siberian branch of the Russian Academy of Sciences said in a statement that scientists discussed the issue with the roundtable in Novosibirsk over the weekend saying that further studies will be needed to assess economic aspects of this potential exploration. Okay. Then we're right to the end of the show. Thank you for being with us. I hope you were interested in our union news in the first half. And you could always respond to Leo's editorials.
You can look at that on LASchoolShow.org. It's on my website. I have 600 articles on there going back to 2004. So, and videos and audios and everything. So please enjoy yourself there. Because I had somebody, I had a couple visitors look at like 400 pages the other day.
Wow.
One visit. I mean, I had like 3,600 page views out of like 200 visitors.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing, huh? It's amazing. People are really, really getting into this stuff. So I hope you enjoy. And talk to you tomorrow night.
Yeah, good night, folks. Have a great night.